Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 84, Wild World. I'm your host, the Hoff Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hey there!
And we are right on the cusp of the launch of the Nintendo Switch. It's going to be out any day now, any time now. Heck, it might already be out by the time you're listening to this. So we are in a very exciting time for Nintendo fans.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear what you thought of this device. You got your hands on it a little early, right?
Yes, I did. I got to play it just recently. So we're going to be talking about that this week. We're going to be talking about a lot of other Switch details. We're also going to be talking about some other game impressions. And then as we prepare for the launch of the Switch, we're going to have this week's big topic, which is the best and worst Nintendo system launches over the past couple of decades. So we've got a ton of stuff to talk about, so let's not waste any time. Let's jump right into it and talk about my hands-on experience with the Switch.
So you attended this event here in San Francisco, and I know it happened in a bunch of other cities. Mm-hmm. Tell me what your experience was. I want to know how big the crowds were, and I want to know what it was like to actually play the Switch.
Well, because the event was invite-only, it was a fairly small crowd. I think there was only about 300 people or so. I think they sent about 150 invites. Everyone was allowed to bring a friend with them. So yeah, about 300 people. And you know, there were plenty of games on hand, lots of things to check out and enjoy. The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild was there, of course. Got to play that for about 20 minutes. And I can't really say that told me anything new about the game, but you know, I can't wait to play even more of it and actually delve deep into this title.
So you didn't play the retail version of the game. You played the demo mode that was available at other events previously?
Well, this definitely wasn't the same demo that I had seen before.
Okay.
It seemed pretty much to be the retail game, just it timed out after 20 minutes.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But again, you know, the game is vast. It's gigantic. There's so much to explore, and you can't even scratch the surface in 20 minutes. So it's like, here, I'm going to push a boulder and fight a couple of bad guys and light some things on fire and take off Link's pants and jump into the water.
That sounds like fun.
And yeah, I mean, it is. But, you know, 20 minutes, that's almost nothing. So.
And is it a lot of standing around waiting for your turn on a game like Breath of the Wild at this event?
No, actually, for Breath of the Wild, the way it was done is they had designated times. You grabbed a ticket, and then you come back at your designated time, and you start playing. So they actually made it really easy. There wasn't a whole lot of waiting going on for that or for anything else.
Oh, great.
Just my overall impressions of the Switch in general is it is a very, very versatile system. I love the fact that you can play by having the Joy-Cons attached to the grip or with the Joy-Cons attached to the system and, you know, playing off the TV, just having the Joy-Cons at your side and just kind of casually hanging around and, you know, playing the game either on the big screen or on the little screen set up, and you just got the controllers in each hand, kind of like a Wii Remote and Nunchuck, and you're just going to town playing Mario Kart or whatever. And of course, you can play it with the Joy-Con turned sideways, you know, candy bar style, like a old school controller. It's got regular controls. It's got motion controls. So I was very impressed by all that stuff. I mean, we'll have to see how it all plays out in you know, the months and years to come, how all that stuff is utilized. But I like the fact that it's all in there. And I also really was impressed by that HD rumble. And I thought I was going to be, but actually going hands-on with it was very, very impressive.
How do you see developers making use of that HD rumble beyond something like 1-2 Switch, which just feels so gimmicky to me?
That's something that, you know, you're going to have to ask the developers themselves. Mm-hmm. But what really sold me on the concept was in 1-2 Switch. There's a game called, I think, Ball Count. And you set the Joy-Con in your hand and you like tilt your hand, you know, back and forward and side to side. And it's supposed to mimic like you having a box on your hand with a couple of balls in it. And these balls like clank around and you're supposed to count how many are in there just by feeling it on your hand. And you really could feel the sensation of a box with balls moving around and knocking into the corners and all that. And I was able to accurately guess how many were on there. And it's just a really amazing sensation.
Yeah. Well,
so
that's cool.
I'd love to see it applied to all kinds of things. But, you know, just from experiencing that, it seems like the possibilities are limitless.
Cool.
I'm still not sold on ARMS. I played that for a little bit, and I didn't really enjoy the motion-controlled movement or using my thumbs to dodge and jump.
Yeah.
I did like actually, you know, swinging my arms and punching to attack. That worked pretty well. But, you know, if I was using, like, buttons under my index fingers instead of under my thumbs, I think I might have enjoyed it more. And then, of course, the final game is going to have traditional controls in addition to these motion controls. So, yeah, I'm still taking a wait-and-see approach on that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was interesting.
Okay.
On 1-2 Switch, aside from the HD Rumble stuff, I tried the milking, and I really sucked at milking a virtual cow, which makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I kind of dream that, you know, if I wasn't talking about video games and stuff, perhaps I could go out and milk cows. But no, not according to this game. I did not do very well. Not so good at milking the cows. Mm-hmm. I really sucked the first time. I tried again. I did a little better, but I still lost to the demo person.
Gotcha. Oh, so you play against a person who worked at the event. You don't get to play with another random goer.
It depends. I mean, I had a friend come with me, and mm-hmm. I was hoping that we would play against each other, but he got sick of waiting to play 1-2 Switch. It was one of the only things we had to wait for.
Yeah.
And he was worried that we weren't going to make it to our Zelda appointment. So he went off and did that, and I snuck in a little bit of cow milking. And then sometimes there were just other people there waiting to play, and so I played a game of the samurai training against another person, and we both sucked at that. We both just clubbed each other on the head and both failed to catch the swords. Yeah. So I definitely need more time with that. I really want to try the other games before I decide. I was,
okay,
despite loving the HD Rumble, I wasn't sold on it overall, but there's so many more things I haven't experienced in it that I'm not ruling it out just yet.
I feel like that's a game that if I don't get to play a demo of it, I'm just not going to pick it up. I don't know, unless I try it on, if you end up buying it and I try it and play it and enjoy it, but I don't think I want to buy that game sight unseen.
Yeah, I'm going to need to try it out at someone else's house too, I think, before I make a final decision. In addition to those, I had a lot of fun with Sonic Mania and Ultra Street Fighter 2. Ultra Street Fighter 2, by the way, I think just earlier today they announced an official release date. It's coming out, I believe, on May 26th. It's going to be $40, and it's going to have a retail release, it appears.
Yep.
But, I mean, I was kind of expecting that I would like those games because, you know, I'm a Street Fighter fan from way back. And I was glad to see my skills have not deteriorated as much as I had feared. Mm-hmm. I actually did pretty good fighting the competition there.
Okay. Did you hold the Joy-Con sideways, or did you play using, like, a pro controller or something?
I think I played it with the pro controller, yeah.
Okay.
If playing with the controller held sideways, I don't know how you do that, because it's only, you know, a handful of buttons like that, mm-hmm. and everything stuck kind of clustered together.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty tough to play it accurately. Yeah, I believe it was the pro controller, and that seems like the best way to play I've seen so far. And Sonic Mania really felt like a true blue, please pardon the pun, a true blue Sonic game. Felt very authentic. It felt like it could have come out back in the heyday of Sonic the Hedgehog in the 16-bit or maybe 32-bit era. A lot of fun so far. Only got to play two levels, but so far, so good.
Great.
Splatoon 2 multiplayer was kind of fun, even though I really have no idea what I'm doing in that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I played two rounds. The first one I did pretty well for myself, and the second one I got utterly destroyed. Another one I played is a strategy game called Has-Been Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, that's just a super convoluted game. You know, the graphics aren't anything special, and it's super, super complex. I mean, there was a person at the demo station telling me all about it, and it was still totally confusing. Like, my entire time I was sitting there playing it, she was trying to explain it to me, and it was still just, like, utter nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck is going on in this game?
Yeah.
So definitely not for me.
Okay. It's a strategy game or?
Yes, it is a strategy game. Not like your typical strategy game. It's sort of got some elements of tower defense in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be download only, indie developed title. So I don't want to be too harsh on.
Gotcha.
It's not like a triple A game or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it will find an audience, but the audience is not me. I'll tell you that much. And speaking of downloadable titles, I also did some two-player co-op snipper clips with my friend who was there, and we had a good time with that. That was fun and interesting and, you know, very good if you've got, you know, someone else in the house to play with.
Yeah, and that's only $20 at launch, I think, here in the U.S., so
yeah,
that might be just an instant buy for me just so I have something else to play other than Zelda.
Yeah, that was another bit of info that came out this past week, as they said it will be available at launch. Before they were just saying sometime in March, and now they're saying, boom, right there on Friday on day one, be able to get snipper clips. And also, speaking of launch titles, found out that Shovel Knight will be available at launch as well.
Yeah, that's great. I this is one I'm definitely going to buy the what they're calling the treasure trove.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have access to the Plague Knight, the Spectre Knight, the regular campaign, and then the King Knight when that campaign comes out.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. I mean, I've already got it on Wii U and 3DS, but what the heck, I'll probably end up getting it on Switch as well.
I feel the same way. And it's not a game I'm going to be shy about spending more money on just to have on another console. It's just one of my favorite platformers ever, so I have to have it.
Yep, it's an excellent, excellent game. Then Nintendo was going and showing off more official stuff about the Switch. They were showing the interface. You know, some stuff kind of leaked out a week or two ago, and we didn't really talk about that on here.
Yeah.
But now it's been officially revealed. It's very clean. It's very uncluttered. Nothing too fancy, but it seems like it's going to get the job done as far as selecting your games and going on the eShop and checking out the news. That's an interesting thing, is that there is a news feature, and that's how you'll be able to easily learn about new releases and check out trailers and such. Just, cool. You know, turn on your Switch, select this news option,
yeah,
and boom, all the stuff is going to be there, so you can find out about the latest Switch games.
That's very, very smart. I like that. And the interface is snappy and quick. And that's
pretty important.
Very refreshing, because the 3DS isn't the best, and we all know Wii U's interface is just dog slow. So it's nice that this thing will, you know, be reactive. You press a thing and it'll launch it right away, and you won't feel like you're operating a VTech game device.
Yes, that is good to see. Also, it was confirmed that you can indeed combine funds from the Wii U and 3DS eShops along with your Switch account. So that'll all be one unified account, as it should be. But we also got word that there is not going to be any virtual console at launch, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I was hoping that they would have it ready for launch, and I'm not sure what their plans are at this point. Maybe that portends bigger things. Maybe we're going to get a subscription service. I know we're getting a subscription service with the online, but maybe they're going to give us, like, for an extra $5 a month, you'll have access to X amount of virtual console games. Who knows? It feels like they would have had this ready at launch if it were just going to be a straight up virtual console play, but who knows?
Well, I hope so. I hope they've got something else in the works, but it's kind of a shame that they had virtual console ready to go with Wii and I think with Wii U, and they don't have it ready for this. So that's just kind of odd.
Yeah.
Because I need another excuse to buy another copy of Super Mario Brothers and Mega Man
yes,
2.
Yes, exactly.
But in the meantime, while we're waiting to rebuy these old games, there's going to be plenty of brand new downloadable stuff in the eShop, as Nintendo demonstrated with their Nindies video event. We found there's a whole bunch of really cool stuff coming to Switch spring, summer, and throughout the year.
Yeah, this took me by surprise. I did not expect amount of great games. I'm sad the event only lasted like 17 minutes. They could have shown us the full trailers for all these games, but it would have made the that event take, you know, upwards of an hour, and I think they just wanted to get all this information out there as quickly as possible. And of course, you can go on YouTube and watch trailers for all these games.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long, but they still managed to cram in a whole lot of exciting stuff. So let's just sort of go down the list of some of the highlights. So first of all, we've got SteamWorld Dig 2 coming out in the summer. I'd never actually even played SteamWorld Dig until just recently. It's a really cool Dig Dug meets Metroid type of game, and I'm really excited to play the sequel. The first one seems really fun so far. We've got Runner 3, the follow-up to the follow-up to Bit Trip Runner, which, you know, came out all the way back on Wii. And that's going to be Switch exclusive, and it's coming out sometime in 2017. But yeah, it's another auto-running platformer featuring the sexy and mysterious Commander Video.
Yep.
We got to see some more Yooka-Laylee, which it hardly even feels right to call it an indie title, since it just looks so professional, looks as good as anything that the big developers are coming out with. It's looking absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, and that's the game from the Banjo and Kazooie developers previously.
Yep, that's correct. And it's weird. They said it was coming sometime in 2017, but then they also said it was coming very soon. So who knows what either of those mean. Hopefully sooner rather than later. And it's going to have a new multiplayer mode that apparently other versions of the game might not have. Shakedown Hawaii is coming to Switch. That is the follow-up to Retro City Rampage, and it's been in the works for quite some time, but it's coming to Switch, which we didn't know before, and it's coming out in April, so that release is really, really soon. You know, after seeing it in action for upwards of a year, I'm glad to see that it's got a release date, and it's coming pretty soon.
Yeah, it looks awesome. It looks like a twin-stick shooter in the vein of like Commando or like Ikari Warriors. So if you enjoy that kind of gameplay, I think that'll be a good one to pick up.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much of it is really a pure shooter and how much of it is inspired by the original old top-down Grand Theft Autos, you know, mm-hmm. GTA 1 and mm-hmm. 2. But yeah, it really does seem to be very, very heavy on the action quotient. Either way, it looks really cool, and I believe it's coming to 3DS as well. But yeah, that was really good news to know that's coming soon. And Blaster Master Zero is also coming soon. In fact, it comes out next week on both 3DS and Switch. That's one I've been super excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool to know that it's going to be coming to console.
It looks great. It looks like a game that could have been made in the 8-bit era. I think it's going to be a blast. I love no pun intended.
Then on top of that, I mean, we knew that Stardew Valley was on the way, but now we find it's coming out with multiplayer. It's going to be the first console to have multiplayer, I think they said. And it's coming out this summer.
Yeah, that's really great news.
Yeah, I've played a number of farming games on Nintendo systems, but you know, obviously Stardew Valley has been really popular recently. So it'll be fun to have an excuse to check out that one. And then there was other stuff just, you know, really quietly announced, like via a graphic at the end. So that's how we found out that Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove is coming out mm-hmm. on Switch. So is Mutant Muds, and so is Treasure Knots, just to name a few. So, yeah, that's a lot of stuff, and we're not even covering, like, half of what they showed.
Yeah, some of the ones that I had never even heard of before just look like day one purchases for me. Off the top of my head, a game called Mr. Shifty. That looks like a top-down Hotline Miami-style game.
Yeah, it's like a stealth action game.
Yeah, and then there's another one. I think the initials were GEM. It looks like a side-scrolling space shooter map. That one looked like a lot of fun in the vein of like...
Oh, right. Graceful Explosion Machine.
That's right.
Yeah.
Graceful Explosion Machine. Mm-hmm.
That was interesting looking.
Those are the two I was really excited for that I had never heard of before.
Yeah, those are looking pretty cool. The other ones that caught my attention were a game called Flipping Death from Zoink Games, mm-hmm. which is like a platformer where you play a girl who's apparently dead. And so she's like doing the bidding of death. You can flip between the live world and the dead world. In the dead world, it's like platforming. And then the live world, I guess you can possess other people, and that's how you do things. So it's sort of like a platformer mixed with Ghost Trick, and that seems really cool and interesting. There was a one-on-one fighting game called Pocket Rumble, and it's totally inspired by the Neo Geo Pocket. Did you ever play the Neo Geo Pocket?
I never did, no.
It was a pretty awesome handheld. I mean, it didn't do very well against Nintendo and their Game Boy mm-hmm. legacy, but it had some really, really great games and some really great fighting games, and this is clearly based on that. And mm-hmm. I think that game's coming out really soon. I think it's supposed to be a March release. So that looks like a lot of fun.
There was a cooking game that looked like a lot of fun too. And that's a game that's already on Steam for PC. So
yeah, I was never familiar with it, but that looked interesting.
Yeah, that one looks like a lot of fun. Yeah, that's what it is, Overcooked. Yeah, that just looks really cute and fun. And I think if they can figure out, you know, multiplayer, like local co-op, I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that could be pretty cool. And then Wargroove was the other one that mm-hmm. caught my eye. I thought it was going to be a hybrid, like, strategy dancing game with a name like Wargroove. But no, it's more like, you know, Fire Emblem and Advance Wars. Mm-hmm. It clearly borrowed a lot of stuff from Advance Wars with the way the units would clash and the enemies would fight. But, you know, there hasn't been an Advance Wars game in a while. So, hey, I am perfectly happy to see this fill the void, even if it is more fantasy than, you know, modern military. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's going to have a four-player mode as well. Lots of stuff having, you know, four-player and multiplayer options. And that one's also coming out in 2017. So, yeah, just, you know, lots and lots of cool stuff.
You know, being able to take these games on the go in a way that you can't with a PC game unless you have, like, a laptop. And who wants to lug around a laptop to play games like these? So, because mm-hmm. like a game like Papers, Please or a game like Kentucky Route Zero, those are the kind of games that if mm-hmm. you had it in some sort of portable format, it'd make it so much more playable and fun to enjoy in short bursts. So that is super exciting. Really, really great news.
Yeah, I never would have imagined a couple of months ago that Switch was going to be so great for indie titles. And we'd have so much coming our way in the eShop, mm-hmm. but it seems to be the case, and it's pretty exciting. And speaking of awesome indie games, you know, just last week we did our top 15 Wii U titles, and one of the games we had on that list was Axiom Verge. And I think it was the only title on the list that didn't have some sort of physical release. And hey, guess what? They have now announced there is going to be a physical release for the Wii U game. It's going to be coming out in the second quarter of this year, 2017. It's going to be $30, but it's also going to include, aside from the game, a deluxe booklet with developers' commentary and art, a double-sided poster, and a DVD with an exclusive making-of documentary. So if you haven't picked up that game before, like now you have like a really great reason to pick it up. Or in the case of myself, I will probably buy it all over again.
Yeah, it's funny that this is coming so late now. Makes me think, oh, they must be porting it over to Switch. It just feels like a natural fit.
I think they've said it is a possibility.
Okay.
They aren't committing to anything yet, but apparently they have been in talks with Nintendo about it, so it might be indeed coming to Switch as well. We'll have to see.
Cool. Fingers crossed.
But regardless, I think I'm going to want to pick up this collector's edition just for all the cool additional stuff. Moving on from Switch news to some current systems, I'd like to share my impressions of a game that just came out this week. That game is Story of Seasons: Trio of Towns from Xseed for the Nintendo 3DS. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should probably mention that I actually did some work on this game. I actually helped out with the localization editing.
Very cool. Is that your first gig like that on a game for a Nintendo platform or any platform?
Pretty much. I mean, I did a little bit during my stint at Working Designs, but this is the first time I've done anything of real substance, and it was a pretty neat experience. But, I don't want that to try to interfere too much with my thoughts on the game itself, because now I'm just trying to enjoy the game as a player. And so far, I'm having a pretty darn good time with it. As always with games in this series, it is calm and pretty relaxing. It does start out slow, as most of the Story of Seasons and Harvest Moon games do. All you can really do at first is raise your crops and forage for stuff like, flowers and branches and whatnot. But as you earn more money, you can buy more stuff. You can, get cows and chickens to raise. You can buy a fishing rod and go fishing. And you can do odd jobs to help pass the time. That's one thing that I think is probably new to this version, but it's a great way to earn extra money. They're just doing odd jobs for the other villagers, like, harvesting their crops or pulling weeds or shipping certain items. So that's a fun thing that keeps things interesting. Unfortunately, that's about all I've had a chance to do. I haven't been able to put that much time into the game yet. Even though it is called Trio of Towns, you only have access to one of those towns at first, and right now, in the part I'm at, I haven't been able to get to the other two towns. I can explore West Town, which is a Old West-style town, but there is also Tsuyakusa Village, which is a Japanese-style town, and Lulukoko Village, which is sort of Hawaiian-influenced. But I haven't had a chance to experience those yet for myself. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot more stuff. You'll have more tools and more towns and more activities and festivals and bachelors and bachelorettes to date and pets to get. And that, of course, is what is most exciting about this game, is that you can get a pet capybara.
That's cool. That's great.
Of course, I've been talking about the capybara for many months, ever since this game was announced. And of course, Xseed came to the right person. If they needed a capybara expert to help out with their video game, boom, I know what I'm talking about when it comes to capybaras.
As you're playing this game, are you seeing stuff you've actually written appear on the screen? And what's that like?
It's definitely weird. It's a lot of fun, but it's also definitely weird.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'm going to keep playing that game as much as I can before Switch comes out, because I want to get my pet capybara. It's very exciting to have a pet capybara in this game.
This is a game, if you got the deluxe edition, comes with like a stuffed capybara, right?
It's not a deluxe edition. It was a pre-order bonus.
Okay.
It's a tiny miniature stuffed capybara, fits conveniently in the palm of your hand.
Uh-huh.
But yes, I love the stuffed capybara. It makes the game extra awesome. So yeah, gotta keep playing. Gotta save up some money so I can get a pet capybara in the game once I get to that point where it's unlocked and I can buy a pet house and have pets and all that stuff. I guess the only other thing I can say about this game is that it is another solid entry in the series. And if you like those sorts of calm and relaxing games such as Animal Crossing, then this will probably be right up your alley. Plus, it's got capybaras.
Sounds like fun.
The other new release I've been checking out recently isn't a game. It's actually a music CD set that was released over in Japan. It is the Legend of Zelda 30th Anniversary Concert CD set. Of course, I'm a huge Zelda fan, so I had to pick this up and listen to it. And so far, it is pretty great. I've had the fortune of being able to attend the Legend of Zelda concerts, I think, 3 times now in real life. And being able to re-experience this on CD is excellent. Does a great job. If you picked up the Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, that actually came with a bonus Symphonic Zelda CD. And this one is quite a bit different and has significantly more content. It's twice as long, since it's 2 CDs instead of just one. And though it does have some of the same stuff, like Wind Waker and Twilight Princess suites, along with the Great Fairy theme and the Gerudo Valley theme, there's also lots of new stuff, like songs from A Link Between Worlds and Triforce Heroes, as well as stuff from Zelda 2 and Link's Awakening. I just love the way that Zelda music sounds when it's performed by a symphony orchestra, so I think this is absolutely beautiful. And if you are a hardcore Zelda fan, I strongly recommend checking it out and picking it up.
Cool.
And I guess it's probably what I'm going to try to use for this episode's intermission music.
Great. I definitely want to hear some of that.
And you have a new acquisition as well, right?
That's right. It came in the mail yesterday. It's the NES Famicom, I think it's called the Compendium. It's a book by a guy named Sam Dyer. It was on Kickstarter. And I finally got the actual book in the mail, and it arrived nearly right on time. And with Kickstarters, you know how it's so dodgy whether you're even going to get the thing you backed. It's called NES Famicom, A Visual Compendium. It's about, I think it's like 400 pages. It's huge. Oh, wow. It's huge. It comes in a really nice slipcase. The cover is lenticular, meaning like if you flip it, the images change. On the cover, it's each letter of the alphabet, and each letter is represented by an icon or a letter from a popular game. So B is Battletoads, C is the coin from Mario, D is a duck from Duck Hunt, E is Excitebike. And these are all lenticular, so when you flip the book, it looks, you know, it's animated. The pages are glossy and beautiful, and the text is really well written. There's a lot of commentary from luminaries from the video game world, developers, important people in the games press industry.
Yeah, even a former Nintendo Power editor, Scott Pelland, who used to be our executive editor, involved with it, as I recall. I
did not know that. That's really cool. So it's not just a beautiful book. It's got a lot of great stuff to read, and the spreads are just beautiful. It works out as like every 2 pages is a spread for one game. I couldn't be more happy with that purchase. So if you're interested in NES history and you want a beautiful coffee table book that you can also read, definitely look into this. It was on Kickstarter. Even if you didn't back it, you can still order it. It's from a company called Bitmap Books, and just Google NES Compendium and it'll probably be the first link.
All right. Very cool. Glad to hear you like it.
I love it.
All right. Let's jump into a little bit of a listener mail. This first one is a tweet that comes from @Alrira, and he was responding to last week's episode with our top 15 Wii U games, and he writes, "Just a minute. No mention of New Super Mario Bros. U in the top 15? I'm midway through okay. And enjoying it more than 3D World."
Really? Wow.
That's what he said. Yeah, I mean...
Huh. All right.
I mean, for me personally... It was like the 4th New Super Mario Brothers game, so it wasn't quite as innovative. I mean, I'm not going to knock the game. It's certainly a great game, and it was the best launch title for the system. But for me, it just felt like a lot of familiar territory, and that's why it didn't make the top 15. And compared to Mario 3D World, I don't even think it's close when it comes to things like innovation. Super Mario 3D World, to me, just felt way more fresh, and I enjoyed multiplayer way, way, way more in that version. So that's why I didn't make the cut, but, you know, I'm not going to fault anyone for liking it, that's for sure.
No, I won't either. I enjoyed it. I played all the way through, but I just, you know, it just felt like a rehash. I felt like I'd played it before.
Right.
It's
exactly.
Not very memorable. Like, I had a lot more fun with Mario Maker. I had a lot more fun with 3D World. And I honestly had a lot more fun with the 3DS platforming Marios, including the coin game with all the coins.
That was New Super Mario Brothers 2.
New Super Mario Brothers. That was new. That's right. New Super Mario Brothers 2. And what was the subtitle? Something like Wayne.
Did it have
something?
One?
It but didn't.
I don't think it had an official subtitle. Just, but yeah, that was when we had to collect all the
gold coins. So I thought that was more fun and innovative than the New Super Mario Brothers on the Wii U. So to each his own.
Yeah, I'm not going to fault New
it's
Super Mario Brothers
list,
U,
but
it's not in the top 15
exactly,
for me.
Exactly, not for me.
Or you.
Nope.
So okay, so now our next one is an email that comes from listener Tony. He says, just wanted to write and thank you for this podcast. It is a highlight of my week. I write this as I'm anxiously awaiting the Switch release. My question is, from all you know so far, what games have you most excited? Aside from Zelda, I'm eager to hear more about Fire Emblem.
I really appreciate you listening, Tony. The kind words, we love hearing that. We don't hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course, we open the show talking about some of the stuff we're most excited about on Switch. But as far as things that are a little further out there, things I haven't got to try yet, my list includes the full Fire Emblem game, as well as Fire Emblem Warriors, Xenoblade Chronicles 2, Super Mario Odyssey, and the new Sonic game that they're just calling Sonic 2017 for now. So all of those are really high up on my list. Can't wait to try all those. Hopefully they live up to my expectations. What about you, Scott?
It's funny, I wasn't super excited for a lot of the titles mentioned during the big event that Nintendo held on, I think it was like January 17th or 18th. Mm-hmm. But Super Mario Odyssey, definitely at the top of my list. Not super excited for Splatoon. I could really give or take on Mario Kart. But what I got most excited for was the indies that were announced during that Nindies event. I would say at least 10 of those games are day one purchases for me. That's the kind of exciting thing I'm looking forward to. The Nintendo obviously is going to make us some amazing first party games, but these indie developers, games like Axiom Verge, games like Shovel Knight, turn out to be some of my favorite games of all time. So I'm excited for the games I don't even know exist yet.
All right. Our next listener email comes from Brian Booth, and he writes, "It was good to hear Scott back on the podcast again. Congrats to Scott on baby Mario Michella. As a happy father of five, I hope you don't leave out your upcoming paternal anecdotes out of the show."
That's crazy. Five. I have one, and that's like, I'm thinking, wow, what would possess somebody to get two of these or more? It's not like Game Boy Advances where you can just stick them in the closet and forget about them and play with them, every few months. These things require constant attention. So I'm excited to play some games with that kid. Right now, all he can do is drool, poop, pee, and sleep. So
He continues, "My main reason for writing this week, though, is because of something that's been nagging at me for a long time, and I decided it's finally time to ask my favorite Mega Man fans about it. Hoff, as I'm sure you're aware, when you beat the 8 robot masters in Mega Man 3, before moving on to Dr. Wily's castle, you have to fight 8 iterations of Doc Robot possessed by the spirits of Mega Man 2's bosses in ruined stages of Spark Man, Needle Man, Gemini Man, and Shadow Man." And that's all true. That is all correct. He continues, "When I was a kid around 7 or 8, one of my first exposures to the wider world of NES gaming was a friend's copy of Mega Man 3. His parents used to babysit me, and he let me play his games and use his passwords. I would swear in a court of law that one of his passwords for Mega Man 3 skipped me ahead to the Doc Robot levels, only they were in Snake Man, Hard Man, Top Man, and Magnet Man stages. I distinctly remember running past the ruins of one of those giant snake robots and fighting Woodman Doc Robot in the awesome Snake Man stage. Here's the thing, I can't find any references to this online, so I have two questions. Hoff, is this a real thing? Was there another version of Mega Man 3 with different Doc Robot stages? Does this password actually exist? And second, have either of you guys held on to gaming memories for years only to find out that they were wrong and that what you remembered couldn't have possibly happened the way you remember it happening?" So to answer that first question, no, unfortunately, that's not something I've ever heard of. It sounds really, really cool, but you only get to go to 4 of the ruined stages. I've never heard of an alternate version or a cheat code that let you go to ruined versions of the Snake Man, Hard Man, Top Man, and Magnet Man stages. As cool as it would be, I just don't think that exists.
That's
sadly
such a specific memory. That's crazy. Yeah, not even a game genie would bring that to you, would it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it sounds awesome, and I do love my Mega Man 3, but nope, I have not ever heard of that one, I'm afraid.
So do you have any memories that you know now to be false memories, Chris, about your childhood gaming experiences?
I don't think so, but let me tell you, when it comes to false Mega Man memories, Brian is not alone, because there was someone I was talking to a year or two ago, I think it was a coworker, who also had a distinct memory of playing Mega Man 4 on the Sega Genesis.
Oh, wow.
And of course, that was not on the Genesis. That was only on the NES. I mean, there was the Wily Wars, which was released only on the Sega Channel in North America, and that had Mega Man 1 through 3 on it, but there was never a Mega Man 4 on the Genesis. Mm-hmm. Yet this coworker, friend, swore up and down that it was a real thing, and that's how he played it, and it just couldn't be. So I don't know. Maybe there is some sort of Mega Man conspiracy going around implanting false memories in Mega Man players. I don't know. What about you?
I think, no, not really. Although there are some things I remember doing as a kid that I can't possibly have done. Like the second quest in The Legend of Zelda. I know I finished it as a kid, but did I do it without help? And I can guarantee you I could not have possibly burned every bush and like pushed every rock to find all the different, where all the different dungeons were. Not that there aren't hints in the game as to where all those dungeons are. Even in the second quest, there are hints. The hints are just very obscure and arcane. And I think you'd almost certainly need either Nintendo Power, or you need to call the Nintendo helpline, or you'd need a friend to show you where all the dungeons were. So I feel like I beat the first quest without any help. Although again, you know, the game comes with a map, and there's kids on the playground who will definitely swap secrets with you, which I certainly did. But in my mind, I can finish the second quest without help, but I know I got some help and cheated.
Okay. Well, that takes care of our listener mail for this week. So let's take an intermission, and then when we come back, we will discuss this week's big topic, which is the best and worst Nintendo system launches. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is Nintendo's best and worst system launches. Of course, the Switch launch is right around the corner, so we thought, hey, this is a great time to take a look back down memory lane and look at all the previous consoles and handhelds that Nintendo has launched and see which have had the most exciting and the least exciting launches.
I think before we even get into this, we have to say, and I have to say, that before the advent of the internet, I don't think I was nearly as acutely aware of system launches as I am now. Also, as a kid, like, you know, I remember the day the Game Boy came out, so that was a big deal. I mean, a handheld video game system like that was, you know, earth-shattering for me. But at that era, that time period, I couldn't put my finger on the release date for some of these consoles. So,
well, that was certainly true for me with the NES.
Okay.
I think pretty much everything after that I was pretty well aware of, thanks to reading about it in Nintendo Power and stuff of that nature.
So Nintendo Power is the only way I was aware of when these systems came out. Like Super Nintendo, we knew about that system for a couple years before it came to the US. So it was a lot of like anxiously awaiting for this thing to come. But
Yeah, in fact, I remember that when I saw it, you know, heading to Japan, I actually wrote a letter to Nintendo saying, oh man, this looks so great. When is the Super Famicom going to come out in the U.S.? And they like couldn't commit to it. Obviously, it hadn't been announced yet. Uh-huh. They just played it totally cool. And they're like, you know, we don't really know. And so to me, that meant I'm going to go buy a Genesis. So that's what I did.
Yeah, we have no plans at this moment.
Yeah, exactly. But that's beside the point. There have been a lot of system launches since then, some good, some bad, but let's jump into it.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with my number three system launch, my third favorite system launch from Nintendo, I am picking the Game Boy Advance.
Okay. So what put this even in your list of top launches? Because I'm looking at the games right now, and at first glance, I said, wow, what a pile of garbage. You know, the GBA, I think more than any other console at the time, became a den of shovelware and garbage, you know, children's games like Frogger Advance and stuff like that.
Well, yes, there were a lot of bad games in the long run. But that's kind of irrelevant to the system's launch.
Okay, fair enough.
What is important for pretty much all these systems we're going to be talking about today is both the quality and the quantity of the launch library. And I think the Game Boy Advance had a pretty good balance of both. It did not have a great lineup from Nintendo. Nintendo's premier title was Super Mario Advance, which was just a port of Super Mario Bros. 2. It was a port of the All-Stars version of Super Mario Bros. 2. So it had the fancy 16-bit graphics. But still, it was basically a game coming out in 2001 that we'd been playing since 1988. So, you know, that wasn't the most exciting thing, but still, it was a really fun game, and it was a game that had never been on handheld before, and so for that, I actually was happy about Super Mario Advance. But more than that, I was really excited that Konami was doing Castlevania Circle of the Moon, which was the first Symphony of the Night-style game to come out on Nintendo systems, and that game was a whole lot of fun, you know. Obviously, you know, people might remember that you know, it was kind of dark when you tried to play it on the non-backlit original GBA.
Yep.
But that aside, it was a really, really fun, really well-made game. Konami also had Konami Crazy Racers, which, for my money, it's just as good as, you know, any Mario Kart from back in that era.
Really? It's funny because I don't know if I've ever played this game. So it had that Mode 7 rotation thing going on. It was the same style game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it's actually available on the Wii U Virtual Console if you ever were curious to check it out. But it was the same sort of idea, only instead of having all these Mario characters, it was all these Konami characters back when, you know, Konami actually made games and had memorable franchises that you would want to have all these characters from. You know, like the Moi head from Gradius, I think, was one of them. You know, the cyborg ninja from Metal Gear. And it was fun characters, creative courses, excellent kart racing game. And then we got Fire Pro Wrestling, and I was a big pro wrestling fan back then. This was the first time that this series got a release in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a renowned, well-known, well-respected series that had been out in Japan for years. And boom, here it is coming out in North America, and it was a really fun game as well. So between those four games, I was very excited about the system launch. And then on top of that, we had Choo Choo Rocket, which was no slouch, and Rayman Advance as well. So I thought it was a really, really solid launch lineup for the GBA. There were other titles too. You know, those were all forgettable. But those 4 to 6 games, you know, were pretty darn great.
Okay.
So I was very happy with that launch.
All right. I take back my pile of garbage. But, you know, I hate to be down on Super Mario Advance, but that's the one that stuck out to me as, wow, Nintendo is putting this as their best foot forward with this brand new console. They're just rehashing a game and not even giving us the original, giving us the All-Stars version. I don't like any of those All-Stars remakes versions of these games. Those facelifts are just dog ugly to me. But
You're crazy.
Really? You prefer the All-Stars versions over the originals?
I don't know if I prefer them, but I certainly don't have anything against
them.
Anyway, that is my number 3 system launch. Should I go on to my number 2, or do you want to go on to yours?
So what I did was I picked like my top 2 favorite launches and my top 2 least favorite launches. I couldn't get to 3 just because I judging by the games themselves, it's hard for me because, you know, when you look at certain consoles like, you know, the N64, there were 2 games at launch, and now you're saying, you know, oh, that must have been one of the worst console launches of all time. But when one of those games is one of the best video games ever made, then that kind of just changes it all. So for me, ranking these was really difficult, and
it was harder than I expected.
And
too.
I felt like I could comfortably pick 2 top and 2 bottom. But when it came to picking a third, I really hemmed and hawed, and I was like, oh, please, I'll just have Chris pick 3 and I'll pick 2.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll move on to my number 2, and I am going with the Wii.
Okay.
Like you said, sometimes all that you need is one really, really great game. And for me and the Wii, that was Twilight Princess. So, you know, that could have been like all they had, and I would still probably choose the Wii as one of my favorite system launches. But it didn't just have Twilight Princess. I mean, Twilight Princess for me is an awesome game, but it had Wii Sports. And Wii Sports, you know, it really sold the concept of the system. You know, it kind of lit the world on fire. Everybody was playing this game. Everybody loved to try it out and check it out, even people who weren't gamers. So that was another really, really significant launch title. Beyond those two, I really liked Trauma Center. So Trauma Center Second Opinion was one that I really enjoyed. And you know, some of the stuff from Ubisoft, I think, was pretty significant. Red Steel wasn't, you know, the greatest game, but it was a solid second-tier title that showed off some interesting aspects of the Wii. And the first Rayman Raving Rabbids was actually pretty cool back before that series got too long in the tooth.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game. It was just a bunch of mini-games, all really based on motion control, but they were really fun mini-games. And to have never really played a motion control game that actually reacted in a meaningful way, it was new and inventive, and it felt really fun. Now, of course, if you make me play Raving Rabbids right now, I'll probably cry because it's just so, you know, not really that great. But at the time, man, I had a lot of fun. There was like a rails shooter in there. There was a mini rhythm game, kind of like a dancing game that I remember. But just that rails shooter, just to play it for the rails shooter and that dancing mini game was enough. And it really showed off a lot what the console could do outside of Wii Sports, which you pretty much, I'm guessing, were sick of after the first week or two.
I might have been, but a lot of people weren't. I know that my parents and lots of friends were, you know, playing it for weeks and weeks and months.
I know
months
there's people out there right now trying to get a perfect 300 in Wii Bowling still.
Yeah, they're at the old folks' home anyway. So Zelda was great, but there was other stuff besides Zelda. So for me, that makes the Wii clock in at number two. What was your number two?
So my number two was the Game Boy. So
The Game Boy,
yes. Not because of the titles, but for what it was. So I know that's maybe not fair, but handheld Tetris and Super Mario Land on the Game Boy were revelations to me. The fact that I was able to go on long car rides or family vacations and take my games with me, that was a complete revelation. And if I only had those two games for the life of that console, I would have been perfectly happy. So that says a lot, I think, about those two titles. Alleyway, baseball,
tennis,
tennis, But and there were only, what, those five games were the launch, the total of the launch titles for the Game Boy. There were no third-party games here. This was all first-party games. So, Super Mario Land and Tetris are strong enough for me that I think the Game Boy deserves a top spot.
Yeah, I was never that into the original Super Mario Land. You know, even back at that time, you know, I tried out. I'm like, this doesn't quite feel like Super Mario to me.
I ended up
holding off on getting a Game Boy for quite a while after that. And then Tetris, you know, it's like, well, I have Tetris on my NES, so.
Oh, man, wow. So, yeah, that was not my experience at all. It was just, like, mind-blowing to have Tetris in a handheld and to be able to play it while the rest of the family watched whatever they wanted on the one television in the house. Because back then, you know, we didn't have a TV in every room. We had a black and white upstairs and we had the one color TV downstairs.
Oh, wow.
And that's what the NES was connected up to. So, you know, when the family was watching television, I couldn't play my video games. So that's why, you know, the Game Boy was also a big deal.
Well, that's interesting. You could go upstairs and watch your black and white TV or play your black and white video game system.
So. My black and green, my green and gray console.
I suppose so, yes.
Or handheld, I should say. I said console again. So yeah, Game Boy. And I know a lot of people wouldn't agree with that, but it's my list. Okay.
Interesting pick. Okay, so I'm going to move on to my number one Nintendo system launch. Again, like I said, you know, it's a balance of quality and quantity. And I'm going with the Super Nintendo, the Super NES.
Wow, okay.
And, you know, it didn't have a ton of titles, but, you know, kind of like we were saying with the N64 or with the Wii, you know, it had one super killer title, and that is Super Mario World, one of the best platformers ever. In fact, I would call it the best platformer ever, certainly the best 2D platformer ever. So based on that alone, I mean, that is a system seller right there. Then on top of that, you know, I was a big shooter fan back in the day, and Konami had Gradius 3 ready to go at launch. So it's like, okay, boom, we got Gradius 3 there. That game looked great. Awesome soundtrack. Lots of fun. Lots of slowdown too, but I can deal with that. And then, you know, I'm not sure this was a day one launch, but within the first, you know, week or two, Final Fight came out from Capcom.
Oh, I hadn't noticed. I hadn't realized that.
And I'm a massive Final Fight fan, as probably listeners already know. So being able to have that along with Gradius 3 and Mario World, that was like the perfect trifecta there. It's like, I need all these games. And when I did get the system, I was just, you know, playing those three constantly. But it wasn't just those. We also had Pilot Wings, which I was never a huge fan of. We had F-Zero, which was pretty mind-blowing back in the day. It hasn't aged that well, but, you know, back at the time, F-Zero, that first amazing Mode 7 racing, you know, that's my mind exploding.
Yeah.
Seeing that game back in the day. Populous was there, and SimCity was surprisingly fun. The Nintendo version of SimCity, that was the game I ever...
Yeah, surprisingly playable.
Yeah, I never cared about SimCity. Mm-hmm. It wasn't anything that was on my radar. I'm like, oh, that's something for PC people. But, you know, I played that on the Super NES. It was actually really, really good. So, yeah, those three key titles for me personally just, you know, was everything I could ask for. A great platformer, a great shooter, a great action game. And, you know, then it had a good selection of additional titles as well. So, for me, Super Nintendo, you know, it's also my favorite Nintendo console of all time, probably not coincidentally. So that's what I'm going for, is the Super NES.
Okay, so for my number one console launch, and it's going to sound bananas, and people are going to run screaming.
Bananas?
Completely bananas. So you picked the SNES, and I didn't put that at the top of my list because, well, Super Mario World was a pack-in game, which is bananas. Mm-hmm. That's completely insane. You're giving away the
best. Keep saying bananas.
Bananas. It's crazy. It's crazy is what it is.
This probably has something to do with Super Monkey Ball, right?
It may. But Super Mario World being the game that comes in the box with the system, that's just crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm picking the NES as my favorite launch.
The NES, wow.
Even though there wasn't a real launch for the NES because they kind of did this really weird soft launch of the console in the US. Mm-hmm. They only sold it out of this warehouse in New Jersey. Well, I'm from New Jersey, and my mother knew I wanted this thing so bad, and she's super resourceful. She got one of these launch consoles for me.
Oh, very nice.
And I got it for Christmas in 1985. I was in the fifth grade. So I got the Rob Gyromite Duck Hunt launch system. Having those two games inside the box, and then the black box games, even though they don't necessarily hold up very well, having what amounted to an arcade experience at home was mind-blowing. So launch of that console and the excitement for getting new games for this system and the hunt for getting new games for this system was a big part of the mystique and the aura that I've built up in my mind around the NES and the launch of the thing. Because at launch, I couldn't buy Super Mario Brothers. I played Super Mario Brothers in an arcade before I ever saw it on a shelf in a store, in one of those Versus machines down somewhere in the Jersey Shore. So
I remember that, yeah.
So that's pretty crazy that it took, you know, many, many months before I was able to even get my hands on Super Mario Brothers, and I bought that
box. Premier it didn't come, game it, for the NES.
Yeah, and
you know?
It didn't come with my console. I had to buy it separately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
So for the fact that Super Mario Brothers, Duck Hunt, Kung Fu, Pinball, mm-hmm. These are all games I owned. Gyromite, Hogan's Alley, Ice Climber.
Mm. I don't know. Now you're kind of going downhill there.
Wrecking Crew.
Gyromite. You don't want to get Gyromite.
I love Gyromite. So Rob.
You don't want to get Hogan's Alley.
Even though it was a ridiculous gimmick, Rob and the Light Gun were just such fun for a fifth grader. I, you know, if I was any older, I think
They weren't. They were.
This is coming
garbage.
From a kid who didn't have an NES. You did not have an NES, so you can't. I don't think you can really speak to how magical the launch
games
were.
Well, I did not have one at launch, but yeah, when I finally played it over at a friend's house, I got to see Rob and Gyromite in action. I'm like, oh man. This is not selling me on anything.
Yeah, well,
but unfortunately, by that time, there were plenty of other great games.
So for me, the launch of the NES was magical because all we had was a poster of games that were supposed to exist, a poster of these black box games. So the console came with this big poster. It had Rob, a big picture of Rob at the bottom, and then these little postage stamp size screenshots of like what looked like 30 or 40 games and the titles of the games underneath. And all I could do was just stare at those little images and imagine what the games were like, and they slowly would start showing up at retail. So that's what made it magical for me, just this newness of video games and the fact that a lot of these were gems, not necessarily all of them, but for a fifth grader, I gotta definitely say Wrecking Crew was a super awesome gem.
Would you stop?
I love Wrecking Crew. It's just a great little puzzle game that, you know, puzzle platformer. And I don't necessarily think it holds up, but it's great. And Kung Fu, still one of my most favorite NES games of all time.
I will agree with you there. I cannot knock Kung Fu or Pinball or Excitebike. Mm-hmm. And between, you know, those, Duck Hunt, Super Mario Brothers, I do think it had a very solid launch.
So just looking at the launch titles for the NES, I can honestly say, compared with all the other games in total from all the other consoles at launch, I've played more hours of those launch games in the NES than I have in all the other games combined, which is crazy. That, not just me, but, you know, looking at the launch games on the other consoles that I really played a ton of, all the combined hours of play do not come close to the hours of play I got out of those NES launch titles. So that's pretty special, I think. So that's why it's at the top of my list.
Well, I'm definitely not going to fault you for picking that one. Obviously, it was not in my top three, but it's certainly not in my bottom three either. Speaking of which, I guess we should move on to our bottom three.
Okay.
The worst Nintendo system launches. And for my number three, third from the bottom, I am going with the Nintendo 3DS.
Oh, that's not even the worst for you.
It's not the worst. Okay. No, for me, it's the third worst.
Now we've obviously revealed what my worst is, and that's my worst, the 3DS. So if you mention any of my worsts, I'll sure. tell you when they happen. But the 3DS Absolutely. For me is the worst launch. Honestly, I can't think of a console, not just a Nintendo console or a Nintendo handheld, but any handheld or console. I can't think of a worse launch lineup and the drought that followed it. That's really what sticks with me, is the drought that followed that launch lineup.
Well, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the launch itself. And in this case, it was a very weak first-party launch lineup. They had Nintendogs plus cats, which, you know, we had Pilot Wings, which was and then we had Steel Diver, which was really
Oh, man, woof.
So none of those games exactly set the world on fire. At best, it was like stuff that we'd been there and we'd done that. And so from a first-party perspective, yeah, it was not a very strong launch at all. We did, on the other hand, at least get Super Street Fighter IV out of Capcom. And I thought that was a really fantastic game, really, really fun, really amazing to be able to play that game on the go. But on the other hand, it was a port. It was something I had already played on other consoles. And so, you know, it didn't hold my attention for super long.
Okay.
But yeah. I mean, they certainly had a problem with that system, and Nintendo just didn't have the support for it. So yeah, that is why it makes my number three worst system launch.
So yeah, and the reason why it was my number one was because I had to play the only game out of this entire list I had any fun with was Super Street Fighter 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely the best one.
And that was I bought Ghost Recon Shadow Wars.
That game was actually pretty good.
It was okay, but I remember it crashing, which is
yes,
bizarre.
That's what I was about to say. It kept crashing on
me. It crashed several times, so why am I going to play a level for 40 minutes and have it crash?
Yep, totally. You're completely right. I didn't know that was happening to other people.
No, it happened to me too. And I also bought Rayman 3D, and it was kind of weak. So I bought games I wouldn't have otherwise bought because the launch lineup was so bad. I was so excited for the promise of this system, which was a 3D handheld video game system. I love 3D, so this was like right up my alley, but there was nothing to play on the thing. And this held for many, many, many months. We had to wait almost 6 months before we had anything worth playing on the system after this launch. So
no, that's not true. Didn't Zelda come out after like 4 months or something?
4 months, all right, 4 months. But I paid so much for this toy. and then it just sat and collected dust for so long until good titles started coming out for it. Now it is one of my favorite systems of all time, but that doesn't erase the fact that the launch was really, really crap for the people that bought this thing early. The nice thing Nintendo did was they turned these into ambassador consoles, and we got a lot of great free stuff that they
20 free virtual console games.
And those they gave us some of the best games ever made there on virtual console. And the fact that they still haven't put these games on virtual console for people to purchase makes it just bananas. So yeah, that's why I put 3DS at the top of my worst list.
Yeah, it was definitely not a particularly good launch. But still, I thought it was a better launch than the launch for my next pick, my number two worst system launch, which is the Nintendo DS.
Okay.
You know, at least with the 3DS, I had a lot of fun with Super Street Fighter 4. But with the DS, you know, it didn't even have that. Their premier title was Super Mario 64, which, you know, on the one hand, well, hey, it's a port of Super Mario 64, but they took out the analog. There was no analog control. You're supposed to use this weird thumb pad on the screen, and it just, you know, didn't work the way it was supposed to. That's not a really strong launch. Probably the best game to come out was Feel the Magic XYXX from Sega, which was unique and kind of wonky. It took advantage of some of the DS's features, but it's not what I would really call a system seller. And beyond that, I don't really think there's anything that I'd recommend buying. You know, it was like Asphalt, Urban GT, and The Herbs, Sims in the City, which just seems like a bad idea all the way around.
What surprises me about the DS launch is that the gimmick of the DS is the two screens, and none of the launch titles really, really make use of that touchscreen on the bottom or the fact that it's got two screens, period.
XYXX kind of did, but again, it was such an out-there, quirky title that I think it slipped under a lot of people's radars.
It's crazy that the DS became the best, based on this launch, and I would say for the DS and the 3DS, you just can't judge these Nintendo systems by their launch, because the DS is the meme, the money printing meme that everybody knows. The thing printed money for Nintendo. Nintendo is sitting on a Scrooge McDuck money bin, like $50 billion. And a lot of that is due to the money they made during the DS era because they sold so dang many of these things and all the games that came with it. So the DS Fat, I never even owned a DS Fat. The DS is also my second least favorite system launch. The DS Lite, when that hit, there were so many great quality games for the DS, and the DS Lite, the difference between the DS Fat and the DS Lite is night and day. It almost feels like two different systems to me. And I bought a DS Lite when it launched, and man, what a great system, and to have all these games readily available and playable. You know, this is like 2 years after the DS Fat had launched. I just don't see how they came out of the gate with that DS Fat and, you know, just a kind of poorly clunky looking, and the sleekness and awesomeness of the DS Lite stands in direct contrast to it. And the great games that we got on the DS is a testament to the you know, amount of money they made on the system. But yeah, launch, man, what a mess.
Yeah, it ended up being great, but who would have known from the way it launched?
If I talk about the launch of the DS, I only think about getting that DS Lite and standing in line to buy that. The DS Fat, I never. Did you own a DS Fat?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was. You did. I was there, right on day one. You know, I don't really know why, because the launch lineup was not terribly exciting. I figured it was all potential, and indeed, it lived up to that potential. But it did. At the beginning, it started off pretty much another mess.
But it's so funny that my top two worst launches are two of the best video game systems ever made.
It is kind of ironic.
So that, I mean, you can't judge these systems by their launch, except maybe the Wii U.
And my third pick, my actual least favorite Nintendo system launch. And I should mention that we're not counting Virtual Boy on this list because, you know, it's the Virtual Boy. But that aside, my least favorite Nintendo system launch was a system that actually sold great for Nintendo. It's the Game Boy Color.
Okay.
Again, another handheld, another system that sold like gangbusters. But the launch, I mean, it was like, they didn't even try. I mean,
no, they didn't. Like, I'm looking at these titles. It doesn't even make sense that this was actually what they came out of the game
like
with.
Like the DS, they're like, okay, we've got Mario 64, which is a good effort. It didn't pan out. You know, with the 3DS, they had Nintendogs plus Cats. That's a sequel to a great game. On paper, it doesn't seem like such a bad idea. But, you know, they just sort of skewed too casual with the 3DS launch lineup. But with the Game Boy Color, it's like, does anybody even want these games? We're going to give, like, a port of Centipede, Game & Watch Gallery 2, you know, Pocket Bomberman, which I guess is okay, and then a colorized version of Tetris, which, you know, on the one hand, it is Tetris, which is an all-time classic, but it's just a colorized version of a game you probably already have and have been playing for, like, the past 10 years. So it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess they knew it was only, like, not really a full system upgrade, just like half a system upgrade. And so they're just like, well, it's just kind of half a system launch too. So we'll just put this thing out there and, you know, hopefully people will buy it. I mean, because it was completely backwards compatible, the system, I think, kind of just sold itself without needing to have a decent launch lineup. But yeah, the launch lineup is just kind of garbage. Forgettable garbage.
Yeah, does it seem like they were just relying on the fact that the screen was in color and you could play original Game Boy games in some sort of weird color mode? Was that helping them sell the system?
I guess.
And I know that it did. So games like Link's Awakening, they did two versions, right? One was the Game Boy version and one was the Game Boy Color version, right?
Well, Link's Awakening DX came out maybe a month or so after the Game Boy Color launched.
Okay.
And it was playable on both regular Game Boy and on the Game Boy Color.
Ah, okay. And so it wasn't a Game Boy Color only game. You could play it on the original.
Right. It came in the black cartridge. And it worked on either system. And, of course, that game was amazing. And if it had come out a little earlier and it was at launch, then this definitely would not be my least favorite system launch, because you know, they can pretty much get me with Zelda every time.
They launched it without a real title here. But do you think maybe a game fell through? You know how release dates of games are these very fluid things that they constantly are pushing? Mm-hmm. And that was also a problem back then. It just wasn't as widely publicized because release dates weren't widely publicized. So do you think they just missed the launch with a game like Link's Awakening, that maybe it was supposed to be ready for launch and it just kind of, is that a possibility?
Probably not. I think they could have had it ready if they wanted to. I mean, I was actually working retail at the time. And so, you know, I knew, you know, it was very easy to see for me what all the release dates and when things were coming out. And it's like, well, is Zelda going to be at launch? No, it's not. Okay, that's kind of weird. Oh, well, whatever. Yeah. It's a Game Boy Color. It's Nintendo. I'm sure it's going to be good. I'm going to get it anyway. But yeah, not a strong launch at all. So obviously, as we're recording this, the Switch is not out yet. But just knowing what we know about the launch lineup, where do you think it might fall in your hierarchy?
You know, based on what we've said and what I hold it to be true, one game can carry a launch and get you to the next big release.
Yes.
And it sounds like Breath of the Wild is that for the Switch. It wouldn't be a day one must buy if Breath of the Wild wasn't on the system.
But it is on there. So
It is. And that's why I bought it the second it went up for sale on one of these big box retailer websites. We both bought ours at the same time.
Yep. But going back to my question as to where I think that the Switch might fall, I think, like you said, it's got Zelda going for it. So I think that's going to put it, you know, possibly into that upper tier, or at least into the middle upper tier. I think it has a good chance of eclipsing GBA in my number three slot. But if not, I could see it, you know, maybe coming just a little bit below that. So I actually have kind of high hopes that they're all mostly pinned on Breath of the Wild. So we'll know soon enough, I guess.
I think we will. And I haven't spoiled this game for myself, but
me
I
neither.
Hear it's one of the best Zelda games ever, if not the best. So I am super hyped. If it's even half as good as my favorite Zelda game, I'm in. So
all right. I think that takes care of this week's big topic. And I guess that means we should wrap up the show. But before we go, there is indeed still time for a dramatic reading. This time from the back of the box of the European version of the NES game Gunsmoke. Are you ready to climb in the saddle and accept the challenge? Gunsmoke by Capcom returns you and game star Billy Bob back to living in a small, bustling mining town during the infamous Gold Rush era. Your skillful control maneuvering and dexterity combined with fearless Billy Bob in a brave attempt to save the town and its people's wealth from cruel and ruthless gold-stealing bandits. You and Billy Bob challenge the notorious killing thieves in gunslinging duels. Every time you and Billy Bob open fire and successfully have a direct hit of a barrel, you release hidden firepower, giving Billy Bob extra quick-acting ammunition to drive the merciless bandits out of town.
Is that it?
That's it.
Billy Bob.
That's it.
Billy Bob.
You and so Billy Bob.
You and Billy Bob. So who am I? If he's Billy Bob, you're just you, the man with no name.
Yeah, just you controlling the action from the other
you're
side
Clint Eastwood,
of the wacky
the man
screen.
With no name.
Capcom did that a lot in the old days of NES games. They would talk about how you're at the controls, you and Billy Bob, you and Mega Man, you and the Captain Commando. They wanted to make sure you knew it was you that were playing the game and not just, some random person that would come over to your house and play it for you, I guess.
I wonder why that made that distinction. Like, why can't I be Mega Man? Why can't I be I don't want to be Billy Bob, but why? Why? What am I? Am I the guy standing behind Billy Bob guiding his hand?
Yes. Yes. Yes, you are.
That's weird. That's weird. Well, the box art is impressive. in the vein of the Mega Man box art, it looks like they got the same artist.
It's very possible.
Honestly, again, this makes me lament the loss of the instruction booklet. What game is it that I just saw that is going to have an instruction booklet?
Binding of Isaac, is they've been promoting that. It's coming with an instruction booklet.
Yes, that's right. Binding of Isaac's going to have an instruction booklet.
And Story of Seasons Trio of Towns has a nice full-color instruction booklet as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's so cool to hear. That's in just the regular version of the game.
Yep.
The instruction booklet. Wow. So that's nice that that pays homage to the bygone days of the instruction booklet. The Binding of Isaac booklet looks like the Legend of Zelda booklet.
Yes,
I mean, they
yes.
patterned it after mm-hmm. that. So that is a really cool homage.
Yep, very much so. Anyway, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find Scott at PlasticBugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Bashella.
See you on the other side of March 3rd.
And my illegitimate child, Iggy Koopa. Iggy! We will see you next time.